Prisoners initially felt shocked, moving from hope to despair. Today, many people recognize the horrific, inhumane acts committed in Nazi concentration camps throughout Germany and Eastern Europe. Likewise, the victims of Nazi violence during the Holocaust had some awareness of the grim fate that awaited them. This knowledge might suggest that fear was the first reaction upon entering the camps, but reactions fell into three clear phases. The first phase began when prisoners arrived at the camp, or even during transportation. Shocked by their situation, they tried desperately to convince themselves that everything would be all right. Although many prisoners had heard terrible stories about the camps, they believed their experiences would be different. For instance, upon arriving at Auschwitz, prisoners were separated to the left or right as they exited the train, one group for hard labor and the other for immediate execution. However, they did not understand what these choices meant. In their shocked state, they succumbed to the delusion of reprieve, falsely believing that being in line could somehow save them from disaster. During this phase, prisoners who hadn't yet adjusted to the camp's horrors were terrified by the brutality around them. New arrivals struggled to cope with the intense emotional pain of witnessing other prisoners brutally punished for minor offenses. Faced with such extreme violence, they quickly lost hope and started viewing death as a relief. Many even considered suicide, perhaps by touching the electric fence surrounding the camp. Prisoners became apathetic, focusing on survival. After their initial shock, prisoners quickly became used to the horror and death surrounding them, leading to emotional numbness. Their thoughts and feelings shifted to survival. Instead of contemplating emotions like love or desire, they primarily discussed and even dreamed about food and other essential needs that were severely limited in the camps. While prisoners hid from the horror in the first phase, the emotional dullness of the second phase acted as a protective shield, enabling them to endure the daily cruelties of camp life and seize any chance to enhance their survival. For instance, when several people died during a typhus outbreak in one camp, prisoners in this phase no longer felt disgust or pity upon seeing the corpses. Instead, they viewed it as an opportunity to take leftover food, shoes, or clothing from the deceased. With no end to their imprisonment in sight other than the guards' actions, prisoners could not envision any meaning in life. Typically, we plan for the future and look forward to seeing our lives develop. However, for the prisoners, there was no excitement about what lay ahead. Many believed their lives had already ended. They merely existed in the camp, having given up living since there were no goals left to pursue. Liberation brought disbelief, then bitterness. Survivors of the concentration camps faced a new challenge upon release. After spending so long in the camps, returning to a normal life proved difficult. Upon their release, they struggled to understand their newfound freedom. Used to emotional numbness, they couldn't instantly shift their mindset and often felt unable to experience pleasure or joy. Having long dreamed of liberation, they found it surreal when it finally happened. Many survivors felt a desire to inflict harm on others, believing it was their turn for revenge after enduring so much brutality. It seemed reasonable to seek compensation, such as taking vengeance on the camp guards. Additionally, liberated prisoners did not always receive the warm welcome they expected when returning home. Many found that their families had been killed and their towns destroyed. Their bitterness extended beyond lost loved ones; they longed for understanding and compassion for their suffering. Unfortunately, those they spoke with after their release, who had never experienced concentration camps, often dismissed their pain, claiming they had suffered too from rationing and bombings. While adjusting to normal life was not easy, most liberated prisoners eventually found ways to enjoy life again and felt grateful for having survived the Holocaust. Prisoners focused on their inner lives to escape reality. Prisoners endured immense suffering in the camps, but some found ways to protect their sanity and survive the horrors by focusing on specific thoughts. For many, imagining their loved ones and recalling the past helped them mentally escape the terror surrounding them. Those who could find even a bit of happiness in their memories often had a better chance of survival. In the harsh reality of the camps, there was no relief. They were forced to perform hard labor in the cold, wearing little more than rags. Yet, love provided a sense of fulfillment. Engaging in pleasant conversations with loved ones, even if just in their minds, was something the camp guards could not take away. Even the simplest memories, like switching on lights in their bedrooms, offered moments of relief. Some prisoners found comfort in nature and humor. A beautiful sunset or a small bird could briefly lift their spirits. During half-hour lunch breaks, prisoners organized small gatherings to distract themselves from their reality, sharing songs and performances. Occasionally, they even found humor in their situation, often imagining their future post-liberation and joking about how camp routines might affect everyday life. For instance, they might humorously forget where they were at the family dinner table and ask for soup from the bottom of the bowl, where the few nutritious peas were found in the camp's cooking pots. Most prisoners accepted fate, but some made choices. The freedom to choose, whether it's picking our clothes, lunches, or charities, is something we often overlook. In the camps, however, choices were far from guaranteed. The ability to make decisions took on a new, serious meaning. Many choices were matters of life and death, leaving prisoners afraid to make them. For instance, when ordered to move to another camp, prisoners were kept in the dark about their true destination. The guards sometimes referred to these as rest camps, but no one knew if they were being sent to gas chambers. Once prisoners realized they would be transferred, some desperately sought to change that decision, sometimes by working harder or volunteering for extra shifts. Yet, the new camp could also offer relief, leaving them uncertain about the best choice. As a result, many decided not to intervene in their fate. Others, however, were determined to keep even small freedoms and took every chance to make decisions. Despite their harsh conditions, these prisoners tried to live by their values as much as possible. Their spiritual lives remained untouched, even if they had to abandon rituals, they could still choose to uphold high moral standards. For example, some would share their bread with those in greater need, despite being hungry themselves. Logotherapy states meaning motivates action. The author saw many terrible things in the camps and repeatedly realized that people need meaning in their lives to have something to look forward to. Indeed, prisoners who maintained this sense of meaning were stronger and more resilient than those who lost it. This insight reinforced ideas from his psychotherapy theory, logotherapy, which suggests that our search for meaning is our greatest motivation. Research backs this idea. In a Johns Hopkins University study, 78% of students said finding purpose and meaning in life was their top priority. When people can't find meaning in their lives, they face an existential vacuum. Those who cannot live according to their values or feel their lives lack meaning often feel empty inside. You don't need to experience severe trauma to feel this vacuum. For instance, the common Sunday neurosis happens when people relax after a busy week and realize their lives lack substance. Logotherapy aims to help people find meaning, preventing the negative effects that can come from a persistent existential vacuum. Life has a unique meaning for everyone. Knowing how crucial it is to find a purpose in life leads us to ask how we can discover our own. Many believe they must first identify their life's purpose to make the right choices. However, logotherapy suggests the opposite. Our actions and the responsibility we feel for our choices create our meaning. For instance, prisoners in concentration camps who maintained a purpose did so through their choices. By deciding to seek beauty in nature or help others in need, they found a purpose that proved they were not defeated and could keep moving forward. This means that everyone has a different meaning in life. If you ask a chess grandmaster about the best move, she will say there is no single best move, it depends on the situation in the game. Similarly, there is no universal meaning of life. It varies based on each person's unique circumstances and decisions. Logotherapy helps people realize that their lives can have meaning and that everyone must find their purpose based on their choices. The meaning of life is limitless. For example, you might find personal meaning in a new job at a recycling startup, feel like you contribute positively to the world, or it might involve a broader impact, like improving others' lives. Confront fears to manage them. While the main aim of logotherapy is to help patients discover the meaning of life, it has other uses as well. Logotherapy has developed techniques that assist people dealing with mental disorders, especially those who have experienced an existential vacuum. Logotherapy achieves this by focusing on internal factors rather than external ones that influence patients. In traditional psychotherapy, a patient's neurotic fears are often linked to their environment and outside events. In contrast, logotherapy believes that individuals can make choices and determine their life's purpose regardless of their surroundings. This understanding helps people realize they control their fears and anxieties, leading to long-term improvements. But how does this work? Logotherapy uses a fascinating concept. When we fear something will occur, it often does, but when we try to make something happen, it usually doesn't. For example, think of a nervous friend who fears blushing in public. Because he constantly worries about it, he tends to blush whenever he's around others. In this case, logotherapy employs a technique called paradoxical intention, where the patient is encouraged to do what they fear. Your anxious friend could try to blush as much as possible in social situations. Eventually, he will find that when he attempts to force it, nothing happens, and he will start to lose his fear of blushing. Key points. 1. Prisoners experienced shock, disbelief, and despair upon entering concentration camps. 2. Emotional numbness replaced shock as survival became the main focus for prisoners. 3. After liberation, survivors struggled to find joy and faced bitterness from their experiences. 4. Many prisoners found solace in memories and thoughts of loved ones to cope with harsh realities. 5. The ability to make choices became crucial for prisoners, impacting their survival. 6. Logotherapy emphasizes that finding meaning in life is essential for resilience and motivation. 7. Everyone's meaning in life is unique, and shaped by personal choices and circumstances.